And we are back with episode 364 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I get it. The networks knew it was going to be unseasonably warm, so we wouldn't notice these premieres were pushed back till October.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I wish you could I could have watched all of the premieres, but I've been having my nose in some books lately.
And yes, I've been a bit of a bookworm myself, so to speak. So, guys, we've got quite a bit of catching up to do since we've been just a wee bit busy. Who wants to start off here? Just jump in. What have you been up to? Gary, you mentioned books.
Yes, and it's all your fault, John.
As it should be.
Yes, it's all your fault. Well, I can't give you 100% blame. I will solidly throw a good 75% your way. For people who don't know on the show, you know, John, Edmund, Bronson, and I, we still keep in touch with each other through social media, even when we're not doing a show or show planning or things along those lines. And John often posts various books that he's in the middle of reading. He's usually in our group, he's probably the most prolific reader of us. One of the many things that John likes to post up is various science fiction books, particularly Star Trek and/or Star Wars. And growing up, I had always been a big Star Trek Pocket Books fan, and probably honestly polished off a good 100-115 of them over the years. And in the past 10 years, life just sort of got in the way, and I hadn't been reading them. But as I see John continually post what he's reading, it whet my appetite. I recently went back and picked up a bunch of the Mirror Universe books that just came out. I read through all five of them in about 2.5 weeks. I'm now on the there's two Temporal Investigation books, which I'm just about to crack open. And then I also picked up the entire Vanguard series, which I'm looking forward to as well. And they've been fun. I never find most Star Trek books to honestly be a deep read, but they're fun. And at least for me, I fly through them. I can usually get through a good 50 to 75 pages in a short amount of time. They're enjoyable. And while you hit some of the books, especially the earlier books with the triumvirate, if you will, Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, nothing can ever really change that much because they have to keep the characters in place. But as they expand the universe out and start to use either new characters or even one time or a handful of times had shown up in one of the various series, they can take them and twist them and really do a heck of a lot with the characters, and they're quite an enjoyable read. I was just focusing mainly on the Star Trek ones because that's what I'm pouring into right now, but several of the Star Wars books are good as well. I reread the Thrawn trilogy over the summer, and there's a lot of good stories that, while they didn't make them onto a screen somewhere, doesn't diminish the quality of the story. And they're nice, enjoyable reads, just like you would want to sit back and maybe watch an episode or two of something that you hadn't seen a while or had some interest in. These books are often the same way. So that's the biggest bulk of what I've been doing, and once again, it's all John's fault.
Yeah, like I said, as it should be. Edmund, I can just say that Vanguard is one of my favorites. So.
Oh, is it? Oh, good. I want to read the Temporal Investigation books that they... I guess the biggest thing was they showed it when it was on Deep Space Nine and did that quasi X-Files type of episode on it, I guess you'd say. And or at least in name only for the investigators. But I'm curious to read those, and then I'll go into the Vanguard series. And I'll have to count my books again, but I think it's somewhere around an 8-book series. So,
yeah, but it's nice that it's self-contained. It's very, very much meant to be a beginning, middle, and end.
Oh, good.
It comes to a definitive close. Let's put it that way.
Be quiet, John. Edmund didn't read his spoilers on these books, Mister.
I didn't say anything.
Okay. Okay.
Then, and I'm not saying anything now.
Good.
But at any rate, one thing that I'm sure that you'll be able to I would read both of those Temporal Investigation books one after the other, because I read them more or less when they came out, and I found it very hard to remember what happened in the first one when the second one came around. They're both written, I believe, by Christopher Bennett, and
yes.
His books tend to be pretty dense.
Okay.
He likes to include a lot of scientific theory and such into his books, so they can be a little dense. Not in a bad way. So.
Oh, no, I got you. No, I'm looking for, like I said, I'm looking forward to it. I've been, I splurged and got them on the e-reader, well, on my iPad. So it's been a much more convenient process than, you know, necessarily having the paperback. While I do enjoy the paperback, this is sort of nice because I can sneak it in, so to speak, you know, when I'm just, you know, somewhere. So it's been, it's probably helped me get through the books quicker.
Gotcha. Let's see, on the reading front then, Edmund, how about you? Anything new to add?
Actually inspired me to get off the books and actually start watching some Jean-Pierre Melville films that have been on my list and on my hard drive for a while. And I'm starting off with his Army of Shadows, which was this movie about the French Resistance end of 1942, beginning 1943. It was actually made in 1969. But because Charles de Gaulle appears in it and isn't even really identified, pinning a medal on one of the resistance fighters, coming out just after the Sabine, and a truly extraordinary film, and it is absolute travesty that it got buried for as long as it did, and then moved on from that. I've got about three or four of his that I want to catch up on, but it seemed appropriate. It was actually just on the night before the Breaking Bad finale. I watched his movie The Second Breath, which was. Actually with a couple of the same actors from Army of Shadows, and it's one of them is a thief who's just a master thief who's just been released from prison and decides to go, you know, the infamous decides to go off on one last score before he flees the country, and naturally things don't go as he planned, and it actually turned out being a great companion piece to the Breaking Bad finale, because it was another criminal swan song, just brilliantly shot and scripted. So that's some of what I've been doing so far, but I'll throw it back to you guys.
Well, yeah, let's see, since Gary, you started off blaming me for my prolific reading and such.
Well, really, it's inspired me, John, so I am grateful. It was all tongue-in-cheek. I've really enjoyed sort of rediscovering the Star Trek books. It was a lover, you know, maybe a dozen, 15 years ago before wife and kids, and it was nice. It's nice to open the door on that realm again. So.
Yeah, unfortunately, after the great Cold Equations trilogy, and Edmund, I hope that you enjoy it. The next one chronologically that came out, not in terms of the chronology of the Star Trek universe, but in the publishing order, was a standalone novel called Allegiance in Exile. I still don't even know what that title is supposed to mean in relation to the actual book, but okay. And essentially what it does is it takes the whole concept of the final year of the original 5-year mission, which of course was never televised, and tells this story that what it reminds me of is way back at the very beginning of the pocketbooks era. I mean, I'm talking about the first dozen or so in the early 80s. There was this one book that called, like, I think it was called Black Fire or something like that, and it basically did the same thing, where it told this story of what happened for something like a year in the unseen part of the 5-year mission, and it got to the point where, you know, Spock was like a pirate or some ridiculousness like that. This wasn't quite as far down that line, but this is what it reminded me of. It reminded me of a story that just did not make sense from the point of view of how we've come to understand what these characters would have been doing in that time frame. I mean, there within the context of the novel itself, if it just existed by on its own, it probably would have been fine. But with all the other novels that are out there and everything else, and it just doesn't fit the kind of gestalt continuity that's out there. And I'm sure that the author would completely disagree with me and say that it more than fits into what is out there. But and that, you know, canon is what one desires to make it. But I just felt like it was really asking the reader to accept conflict between characters in a time frame where I just don't feel like it was authentic. So it was a little bit of a downer for me to come off of that. I gave it, you'll see eventually in my review on Vogue. Let's put it that way. Since then, I've kind of jumped into another Star Wars novel, this one called The Last Jedi. It's kind of an extension off of a trilogy called Coruscant Knights, which was all about the latter days of the Old Republic as the Empire was rising, and this one Jedi who thinks he's the last one out there as he's being hunted down by the Empire and Darth Vader. So it's a continuation, which is a little bit of a challenge, because I don't remember, again, kind of akin to what I was saying before, I don't remember all the details of that earlier trilogy from a few years back, so thankfully it doesn't rely too much on the reader's memory of all of that, but it is a little bit of a daunting read. Meanwhile, I'm also reading, for various reasons, American Gods, and I've been reading it on and off for the last... I guess I started it when I was off on vacation to Myrtle Beach back in August. So the last couple months at least, on and off. And I'm about two-thirds of the way through. So I'm significantly through at this point, so I figured I might as well mention it. And I'm kind of taking it in bigger and bigger chunks at this point, because it is getting a lot more enjoyable as I get further and further into the premise and I kind of see where the story is going. It reminds me a little bit, certainly not in terms of the content so much, but it reminds me a little bit of the Dan Simmons book Hyperion, where there's just all these different takes on classic stories that are kind of reframed, and obviously the premises is that, you know, in America there are no quote-unquote gods in the sense of mythology as we know it, so there's kind of the old mythologies that were brought over by the immigration of Europeans and others, and those who were kind of forcibly brought along, plus the amalgam of that with the older gods of the native people that were here. And that's vastly simplifying this book. But that's kind of the underlying premise that is on the back of the book anyway, and I like it. This is kind of like right up my alley, so... Neil Gaiman, so those who there are probably a lot of people out there who have been nodding their head as soon as I mentioned the title, but there you are. So, I mean, from the reading front, that's generally what I've been focusing on, those two, and, you know, besides the usual comic book stuff and so forth. But let's see, beyond that, Gary, see anything good lately, or has it been all reading?
Well, we don't discuss this show, and... I'm starting to feel like I'm obligated to watch it, but I did watch the latest Revolution that came out, and I feel like I want to know what happens to the characters, but I really don't want to know how they got there. It just seems to be getting worse and worse, and I might drop it soon. So
that's interesting, because I did I was remiss in putting it on the list last time, but I've got to disagree somewhat. I was a little surprised by this last episode.
Really?
I thought that it was kind of surprisingly dark. Certainly darker than what I'm used to from this particular show. So, I kind of liked it.
I thought the show had been getting dark for a while now, honestly, but,
Well, it's all relative, but I also skipped a good part of the second half of the first season, so that might have something to do with it.
Well, all I know is when Charlie's trying to save Monroe so she can kill him herself, that's just stretching things.
I don't know, but no, I didn't have nearly as much of a problem with it as apparently you did, so.
Yeah, I will say, yes, I have continued watching, actually, the part that stood out for me was... Neville being a major manipulative badass again. I thought that was his little scheme there to get in good with the government secretary of whatever she is.
That's true. That was a rare shining point of this.
You know, it just shows, you know, Giancarlo Esposito was fabulous and everything. So, and
when he killed that guy, oh, gee, I did see that coming.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I'm. Unlike last season. It's still on the DVR, and yeah, I mean, you know, it's more on the basis of you know, that retool of the writing room and Bette Edlund being in there. That you know, yes, I want to stick with it and see what they can do with it. Because I know, you know, a lot of these early episodes is more them just trying to, you know, turn the ship from where they were. So yeah, for now it's worth hanging in with, and you know, and. In terms of other stuff I was watching, I was deliberately kind of holding off on this till the actual season finale went past and we saw where they went. But I have watched The Bridge all the way through to the end. You know, since FX is has kind of been trying to establish themselves as another spot for good drama. You know, after they won me over with The Americans earlier this year.
I thought that was the vibe.
And
sorry.
Which they kind of cliff hung for the end of the season, and but the hope is that they'll just kind of get rid of that fairly early on in the second season, and then concentrate on having Ted Levine and Damian Bashir and Diane Kruger and this odd team they've put together out there, investigating the weirdness that is the border. So, I would definitely recommend it for people who like kind of offbeat dramas. You know, it's well away from what we.
And your character isn't really being given much of a characterization, but it's been fun. And yeah. This is now the era where, because of the survival of the main character, so to speak. For the longest time, Tom Baker wanted nothing to do with the Doctor Who audio dramas and everything else, so there was limited stuff from the first four Doctors in terms of the Big Finish productions. It was really heavy on 5 through 8. And so now you've got a lot of the quote-unquote gaps in the ongoing narrative. Not that there is much of an ongoing narrative, but such as it is, you've got a lot of stories that are now kind of shoehorned in between these episodes and the audio drama side of things too. So as we go along, I especially since the TV viewing schedule is rapidly filling up as the fall season kind of crests along the wave here, it opens up more time for me to go ahead and listen to some of those Big Finish audio dramas. So there we got it as far as the other TV is concerned. I mean, there's nothing really else out there. But one movie I did watch, and this is kind of funny, After Earth. What a turkey that was.
Was that the Will Smith?
Yes. Oh, yes. What a terrible movie.
I have not had the opportunity to watch it.
Yes, once again proving that Scientology theology does not make for good cinema.
No, it really does not. It just does not. It's worth watching just to see that why you don't ever want to do this kind of storyline. And I don't know why they thought that this was going to be a major franchise. I mean, there's a whole novel line that was planned. There were whole sequels that were planned out of this, and it is the most basic story that you could imagine, and it just is not a very good one either.
No.
So, I'm guessing you've seen this, Edmund.
It's not so much that I've seen it. It was just I got intrigued once I'd done quite a bit of reading about. So I'm kind of well aware of the plot and the implications they were trying to bring to it. So. And once I'd read all of that, I had no desire to actually see the movie.
Keep going with that.
But,
no, really, just going with that idea.
But yeah, the idea that, oh yes, it's going to be uplifting to have your kid thrown into the middle of all this stuff and have him persevere against the odds, in reach enlightenment in a volcano that looks very much like the one on the cover of Dianetics. not quite viewing for the masses, I don't think.
No. No, and I would say it shouldn't have been viewing for me either. But it's one of those things where the concepts are interesting, but it really would have been just fine as a short story, and kind of dispensable in that sense too. But yeah, when you layer in all this other junk into it, it really doesn't help. And yeah, yeah, sorry people, yeah, I am going to call it junk. Deal.
Yeah, and well, I mean, if we're going to go into, I could never actually, I always just let it record and would watch it later in the week. Cause it was ridiculous to watch it right after Breaking Bad. But I have persevered with Low Winter Sun, and unfortunately it is, aside from that, yes, it's another case of an adaptation, but this is adapting something that was essentially a longish movie. British Low Winter Sun was two episodes that add up to about 2.5 hours, and trying to expand it into series form, you know, they've got some wonderful actors doing a, you know, making a yeoman's effort, but it's really a bit of a meandering mess about a lot of people who you don't really have much sympathy for.
It's comic book related, but I figure I'll vent. I've noticed lately that they've been taking Superman and using him as a villain. I don't know if they feel they've reached the end of this character and they have to do such a drastic change, but there's two series out right now. One's called Injustice and the other one's called Earth 2. And in both series, Superman is portrayed as, one, an outright villain, and number two, more of I'm doing something for the good of everyone, whether you like it or not, type of character, which has never been the archetype of Superman. And I just find it frustrating, dull, and I just find it frustrating that while there's, you know, an unlimited number of characters that you could use to make any social or even story point you want to make, why go to that extreme?
Hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, in Injustice's case, it's, I think there's more going on there, but I'm kind of with you when it comes to Earth 2. There was really no need to do that, but I don't know.
Plus, weren't all the crises supposed to get rid of all the alternate Earths?
Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there's also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for this show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Misuse of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...